Radio.
This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Catitude. I'm your show host, Michelle Fern. I have a topic that I think every pet parent wants to know more about: how to save money at the vet, and some tips on just saving money with your pet in general, but mostly vet focused. So stay tuned. My guest today is going to tell us all about it. We'll be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'd like to welcome Amy Castro. She runs the Pet Parent Hotline and has some great tips for us on, you know, what it's like to be a pet owner and, more importantly, how to save money at the vet. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and the Pet Parent Hotline?
Yes. So I am a longtime animal rescuer. I founded and run a pet rescue that really focuses heavily on cats. And after being the person that takes all the phone calls when people want to call and surrender their pet, my question is always, why? What's going on? How can I help? And I realized I could make those phone calls a focus, and I do. But I started thinking, well, I could probably reach a lot more people who are probably having these same problems by starting a podcast. And so I did. So that's how the Pet Parent Hotline got started about three years ago now.
Well, I'm happy to have you on. And to all my listeners, see, I like having other podcasts on. But you know what? The key is knowledge. Knowledge to the pet community, the cat-loving community, is important. And that's why I have, you know, guests on the show to educate our audience. And I love what you're talking about. You know, one of the big deterrents for people deciding to become a pet parent is cost.
Yes.
And the cost goes way beyond, you know, the fun stuff, the toys, the food, the treats, you know, and even other fun stuff like not so much fun for you, scratching posts, litter boxes, litter, water fountain maybe, or water dish. But it goes way beyond that because you have to consider, you know, care. And that with that care comes, you know, vet. So many pet parents feel that when they go to the vet, it's like a big mystery. The cost is out of their hands. They never know what they're going to get. Is it, you know, they go in to get, you know, a few shots and before you know it, it's $400.
Or so more.
How true is that?
I think it is definitely true. I think that we make a lot of assumptions about what it's going to cost to go to the vet. And especially, you know, in the past couple of years, things have doubled and tripled and have risen astronomically. Yes. And I see the complaints of people online like, I can't believe I walked out of my vet and it was $700. Find another vet. And that's probably not the solution. It's knowing what you're walking into before you walk in.
Very true. And I think a lot of people, when they come in front of a doctor, whether it's a veterinarian or a dentist, or although dentists are pretty good about price, or even a medical doctor for themselves.
Yeah. Well,
dentists usually lay it out. My experience in the dental world, whether it's more for people dentists, but I've had my pets have had plenty of dental, most dentists will give you, these are the costs, this is what needs to be done. And that field has been consistent with, these are what the costs are. We need to do this now. We don't need to do this later. A lot of people, though, when faced with a doctor, think, how can I ask the price? And you know what? You can. I once, and these are true stories, but these are people situations. I once was at an ENT and he needed to have a procedure done. I said, what does it cost? He goes, I don't know. I go, well, find out. I need to know what it costs. I was going to get it done, but I wanted to know the cost. He literally went to the front desk, asked the person and found out what the cost was. I'm not going to sacrifice my health, but you know, what else do you buy where you don't even know the cost? It's just a gray area.
And yeah, exactly.
Right. And I realize you can't do this all the time because in some cases you have an emergency situation, you know, whether it's for, you know, human or for your fur babe. But there was another situation where I had gone to, you know, years ago to a dermatologist and the price was always the same. And all of a sudden the next time it was like, you know, 70% higher. And I said, why is it more? Oh, I don't know. The receptionist, I don't know. You have to ask the doctor. I said, okay, let me ask the doctor. Well, he's busy now. And I said, I'll tell you what, I waited about half hour, 20 minutes, still too busy. And this was years ago. So I said, you know what? I'm going to pay your bill. I don't not pay my bills, but when the doctor can talk to me, then I will come back and I will give you my card and I will pay the bill. So I left. The doctor called back later that afternoon. I'm sorry, there was a mistake, and corrected it. So that's just two of my little examples. I have veterinary examples too, but don't be afraid to ask questions. I think we do. We get intimidated by doctors, whether it's people doctors or veterinarians, and are just intimidated to ask, what is the cost and is that necessary, a good to have, or is it, well, I can do it, but it doesn't really matter that much that I get this done and I could maybe do it myself. There could be situations like that. What do you think, Amy?
I mean, I think you're absolutely right. You've got to use your voice. I've stressed that so many times to people. You know, use your voice, ask your questions. Remember that you're the customer. And, you know, that phenomenon of being afraid to speak up, I think they call it like white coat syndrome, even though hardly anybody wears white coats anymore. But, you know, a lot of times people feel intimidated by somebody who's, you know, they're the authority, they're the veterinarian, they're the ones that went to all that school, they're the one that this is their office kind of thing. And so either you're afraid to ask, or, you know, sometimes I think we can do a better job preparing ourselves when we go in. You know, you mentioned emergency situations, right? There might not be a whole lot of preparation, but knowing when you go in before you get to the parking lot, you know, what is it you're there for? Getting estimates of what it might cost you in advance and having your questions written down that you want to ask and being prepared to ask those questions can definitely help us get better information and make more informed decisions so we know what we're agreeing to instead of just nodding and smiling and, like you said, walking out with a huge bill that you didn't have any idea you're going to get and have no idea how you're going to pay.
And what is your thought on asking prior to the visit? So if someone is going and is checking out, say they're looking at different veterinarians, they don't have one that they're consistent with, what kind of questions can they ask to find out pricing beforehand and what services they'll get for that price?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just being straightforward and asking the questions. Say, you know, if it's a new facility, just say, hey, I'm looking for a new facility, wanted to get to know a little bit more about your clinic. Can you give me an idea of how much these basic things might cost? And obviously, I just actually got finished with a veterinary client helping them implement software. And when there's thousands of price codes in there for various things, so you're not going to ask about everything, but you know, you want to know what's the walk-in, the door price for a wellness exam, for example. So you know there's going to be the exam, you know there's going to be vaccines, you know, if you have an idea of what the basic vaccines would be at a wellness exam based on your pet's age. You know, sometimes even just asking, are there any other fees that I haven't asked about that are fairly common? I know I do that in rescue. I mean, I have my primary vets, but I'm always going to call and say, hey, we got this dog in. He's limping on a leg. What is it going to cost me to get an exam and, you know, a standard, usually two x-rays for a broken leg? You know, I mean, you may not know that as a layperson, but, you know, just say, here's my situation. Can you give me a ballpark idea of A, what they would do likely as a starting point, and B, how much that would cost? And especially if you're shopping around, you know, if you don't have a regular vet or you're looking for a new one, those prices can be pretty different even within the same town. So it's always good to know.
And here's a tip. And listeners, this is kind of a life lesson when it comes to asking questions. Keep a log. Write down the time, the place you're talking to, the person's name, and what they said. Because many times you'll get someone that is maybe not as knowledgeable as they should be, and they'll tell you something. And then when someone comes back to you, they'll say, well, who'd you talk to?
Exactly.
Your receptionist. Who do you think I talked to, right? And they'll say, but who was it? So I've learned a long time ago, keep a log, not only for your veterinarian, but anytime you're talking to people, keep a log of that information. It will save you. Okay, what is the difference between a tech visit and a doctor visit? And when is each of those visits appropriate?
Well, tech visits, I will tell you, are becoming more and more popular for a variety of reasons. One of the main differences is that a tech visit, you're seeing a veterinary technician, not a doctor of veterinary medicine. And the cost to see that person is generally going to be, it's going to be lower. And so my philosophy is always, you know, if I'm going in for something, can I ask if a tech visit is an option? You know, if I'm going in for a nail trim, I'm probably not going to see a veterinarian anyway. It's going to be done by a technician, but there might be other things like a follow-up or maybe even some routine vaccines that, you know, if you're going to pay an exam fee and for the vaccines, the exam fee for the technician is going to be less than for the veterinarian. You may not have a ton of control over that, but, you know, it certainly would be worth asking a clinic, hey, you know, do you do technician-only appointments? And what kinds of things do they see so that you know in advance that's what you might want to call and have done as a money-saving option for yourself?
Okay, thanks. What would be a scenario where going to the ER would actually save money in the long term?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question because a lot of times, you know, my initial gut instinct as somebody who's taken lots of animals to the ER is it's not, but
it's right. It's not, but if it could cause further damage.
Yeah, but yeah, then that's what I was going to say is that, you know, it generally is going to be very expensive, but you have to look at the long term. So just as an example, if you dropped a pill on the floor and you can't find it and you really think that your cat ate it and it's Friday, an emergency visit could, you know, could be a situation where you might spend a couple hundred dollars to check if they have swallowed it versus waiting until Monday. And now my cat is having symptoms or seizures or something like that. Now it's also an emergency, but it's going to be a hospitalization and monitoring and, you know, or maybe even a situation where your cat ate something and it, you know, it's causing some type of intestinal upset and now they're going to need surgery because you waited. So there are situations where if it is a true emergency or something that you can head off a problem at the pass, it's going to be a lesser fee than allowing something to become more serious. And beyond the cost, the financial cost, you know, what is the cost to your pet, to their long-term health or to their life if you wait?
Exactly. Okay, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. Molly, here's your dinner. Zeus, that's not your food.
Don't let that happen to your precious cat. Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and conveniently located on the cat tree. It's the perfect way to eat. It's a beautiful wrought iron tray that easily attaches to your cat tree and keeps dogs and other critters out of your cat's dish. A must for multi-pet households. There's a 6-inch tray for large bowls and a 4-inch tray for smaller bowls. Purchase your cat tree tray today. Go right now to cattreetray.com. That's cattreetray.com. CATTREETRAY.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking to Amy Castro. She runs the Pet Parent Hotline, and we're talking about money-saving tips before you visit the vet. So let's talk about what you're agreeing to when you're at the veterinarian. So a lot of times they'll recommend tests and treatments and just a whole slew of things. You know, they look at your cat that I brought in and say, okay, and come back with this sheet. And there's a bill, you know, a fee at the bottom. It's like, you know, oh, why is that four figures? Okay. So what is a good way to start the conversation? I look at it this way. Tell me if this is what you would do. I look at it as must be done, nice to be done, not really, maybe okay if I really want to spend the money, but it's not that necessary. That's what I see it as, you know, as far as that. That's how I categorize things, because they do tend to add on, especially at places that are, and I'm not going to say the names, but more chain oriented. They tend to pad it up a little bit in my experience. Although the veterinarian, and I've had veterinarians at these kind of chain places, they're very nice to say, well, you know, we're giving you everything, but you really don't have to do these other things. A good vet, in my opinion, will do that. What are your thoughts, Amy?
I think there are two different ways that that can happen. One could be, you know, a padding situation or there's a difference between these are all the things we could do and these are the things that we must do or we would want to do in a certain order. And so my question as the consumer would be, you know, looking at it and saying, okay, you know, these are a lot of tests and this is a lot of money. What would you suggest we start with? What is the first step? Or, you know, if you could only do one today, which one do you think is the most important on this list of things? I don't think that anybody's very likely to admit, oh yeah, that's completely unnecessary. We just put it on there kind of thing, or it's padding.
Right.
But so you got to be careful how you ask that question. But I think it's a matter of finding out of those 10 things, what are the things we truly need to start with? What do they do? You know, what are those tests? And what is going to be the impact on my pet? So like just something as simple as bringing an animal in and they're going to do x-rays. And it's like, okay, you know, is the x-ray going to tell you something that you can fix? Or is the x-ray just so that you know that it's broken, but I'm still going to have to go to a specialist? And why would I do that now versus wait? You know, something like that. Just making sure you fully understand what it is and what it's going to accomplish if you do it. And then, you know, getting a prioritization of all of those things if there is a budget limit.
I absolutely agree. And I would also say, when you're getting, you know, a lot of work done, even if it's just the vaccines, you know, generally you pay for, as we mentioned, the first half of vet visit, then you have the vaccines on top of it. And gosh, just that could set you back like $300 or something. Don't be afraid to ask. And sorry, vet people that are going to hate me for this, but don't be afraid to ask, you know, I'm getting a lot of work done. Do you think you could trim, you know, my cat's nails while you're back there? Trimming nails is usually like $10 or $15, so it's not that much of a cost. For most cat parents, me included, I can only do Dennis's nails, the others forget about. But it's not an easy thing to do. And in most cases, the vet tech, they're already holding the cat down and burritoing him and doing their special thing that they do. It's not that big of a deal to do it. And they're happy to do it if it makes, you know, you happy. And it's a little freebie for you. So don't be afraid to ask either.
Well, and I think don't be afraid to ask along those lines of vaccines that you had mentioned, too, is that every cat situation is different. You know, my 15-year-old indoor cat only Pickles is going to have different needs than somebody else's in an outdoor cat that's 3 years old or younger. And I don't want to debate the in and out thing, but, you know, so it's okay to talk to your vet and to basically look for some tailoring of those needs because, yeah, I mean, your annual wellness is going to come. I mean, they're automatically going to want to give vaccines because that's what we do, but we don't have to do that for our specific pet. So, you know, if my cat's had vaccines for umpty ump years and now she's 15 years old and she's indoors only, I will tell you, I don't vaccinate her anymore. You know, she doesn't have contact with other cats. The cats she has contact with are vaccinated. And so, you know, I don't think at 15, she still needs some of those vaccines. So we just don't do them. So it's, you know, you really need to talk to your vet about the lifestyle of your pet and ask for customized recommendations, not the this is what we do on a wellness exam standard recommendations, and have that conversation. It's really goes back to what we said in the very beginning. It's having that conversation and asking those questions. Otherwise, they're just going to go forward with their checklist for the most part.
Right. And I actually agree with you. And there's several veterinarians I've talked to over the years that agree that if you have indoor cats, do they really need to be vaccinated if you're not going to be introducing new pets to the home, especially other cats? Because I believe from what I've learned, diseases are transmitted more cat to cat than dog to cat. But I might be wrong. I'm not a vet person. But there are some places where you must get rabies every year. You must do certain vaccines every year. And I have an issue, but I'm not going to go there. I live in one of those places. I don't agree. But, you know, because if the cat is so old, you really need to bring that, you know, trauma into their body when it's not necessary.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, we could do a whole episode on vaccines. Yeah. How much is, already still in their body from the vaccines they had umpty-ump years ago, too. So,
right. Let's talk about saying no, because this, I think, is up there with white coat syndrome. And it's funny because when people say the words, and I'm apologizing in advance, when people say the words, well, not today, it always reminds me of the church lady in SNL. So it's just a mindset. But there is a way when you place in time when you definitely should say not today, or I'm not going to do that vaccine today or this service now, but thank you for recommending it. How can people, I think it's okay to say not today or not, I'm not going to do this, but how can people feel comfortable saying that at the vet? And is it okay? I mean, how can they feel comfortable with this?
First of all, there's just the basic human fear of saying no, because people don't want to hear no, you know, in most of our lives. And so usually we'd get a negative reaction if we tell somebody no. And so a lot of people have a hard time saying that simple two-letter word. So part of it is getting over that. Part of it is realizing that, you know, probably the other person on the other side of the conversation at the vet's office is not super vested. This is what we have to offer. If you don't want it, you know, it's like saying, I don't want salad dressing on my salad. You know, it's probably not a big deal to them and they're not going to have a big reaction. The other thing you can do, too, is if you're not really sure, just being able to buy yourself some time and say, I need some time to think about this, or I need more information. Can you provide it to me so I can go home and make a decision? And you can even ask something like, you know, when would I need to decide? Like, when would, depends on what it is that you're saying no to. You know, maybe if it's, let's say it's a surgical procedure or a dental procedure, and you're, you know, like, I don't know if I want to do this or not. I want to think about it. I want to think about how I'm going to pay for it. When do I need to decide? It's, you know, and having that, giving yourself a little bit of a deadline, I think is helpful. You know, the other thing I think to say is that I think it's important to just kind of get comfortable with the fact that you are the one that's making the decisions for your pet. And it's your right as the customer and as the pet parent to make the decision of what you want to do with your pet. At the same time, depending upon what you're saying no to, you know, you also are now taking the responsibility for the outcome. And so I usually, if I'm going to say, you know, I don't really feel comfortable doing that. Here's a quick example. I have a cat right now. Not my personal cat, it's a cat in the rescue who was returned for inappropriate urination. And the vet wanted to put her on Prozac because she was having a lot of bladder symptoms, you know, in addition to just not using her litter box. And it's like, you know, I needed time to think about that, because what is the long-term implication of trying to adopt out a cat that's on Prozac? And what does that look like to the consumer? And does the cat really need it? Or just getting her out of the home where she's getting beaten up by the other cat, maybe that will calm things down. So it's okay to say, you know what, I will definitely think about that. Where can I find out more about that? And when would I need to get back to you on a decision? And just using that as your no.
Great points. Great points. So we have a few more minutes. Let's talk a little about home care and prevention. Now, we've talked about this a lot on Catitude. We all know cats are stoic creatures. How much does early detection really matter in cats?
I think it's huge. And I think it's because they do hide it so much, we have to be super aware and on top of their behavior, because it'll come out in subtle signs. And the sooner that we can get those things taken care of, obviously, you know, usually the less intervention it's going to take, i.e. the less cost. So yeah, it's definitely important. I just had a situation recently with that same cat, Pickles, where she just wasn't her normal love me, let me headbutt you all the time self. And at first I thought, well, maybe it's just because it's been so cold and she was kind of like loafed up, you know, in a little lump. And after about a day or so, I thought, no, something's going on here. And sure enough, she was having kidney issues and she was dehydrated and all these little things. Oh, not little things, they were big things, but it probably had been going on for a while and she hid it well until I noticed it. So really trying to watch for those things is definitely important, so you can get in and get intervention before it turns into a bigger issue that's going to cost more.
Okay, thanks, Amy. What is the one question that every cat pet parent, especially those listening, or if you don't share this question, or even if you it's for you, share it anyways, but what is the one question every cat parent should feel empowered to ask?
The one that comes to mind is, what's the long-term impact if I say yes? And what I mean by that is, you know, they want to do something and you're going to agree to it. What's the long-term outcome? Because I think as a pet parent, depending upon your pet's age, you know, there are people who, no matter what it takes, I'll spend what it takes and do what it takes to keep my pet alive, for example. And then other people where it's like, okay, if it buys 6 months, but they're not the best quality, you know, maybe that's not how I want to spend the time with my pet. So I always want to know, okay, fine, if I do all of this, what is it going to buy my cat? You know, more time, quality, whatever it might be. Is it going to fix anything, or is it just palliative? And I think that helps me get right in my head to make a decision on things.
Okay, thank you. Okay, our last question. If you could give cat parents one financial confidence tip before every vet visit, what would that be?
I think it's knowing your priorities going in. You know, what are you trying to accomplish with this visit, especially if it's an ill pet visit? And then what can you afford? Because I think we don't spend enough time talking to our vets about budget, that we are on a budget. They know we are. They're human. And so, you know, knowing those two things, the priorities, and then this is what I've got to spend, or this is what I can afford at this time, will help your vet guide you as to what steps you can take for your pet.
Thank you so much. Can you tell us more about the Pet Parent Hotline, and also share, because you have a lot of financial tips as well, and also share where people can find them?
Sure. So yeah, the Pet Parent Hotline basically tries to address questions like this that we've been talking about today and beyond, the things that keep pet parents up at night Googling for answers and not finding good ones or finding conflicting information. So we're trying to solve problems for pet parents before they get to the point of calling me to surrender their pets. I mean, that's my number one goal, is to keep pets out of rescues and shelters and in their homes by providing them the information to their biggest problems. And you're right, we do have a lot of resources on the website in addition to the podcast, the blog, etc. But the website is petparenthotline.com. And I actually put together, just for your listeners, a free handout with financial tips, because, like, you know, we can't talk about everything under the sun. And if you want that, you can get that at petparenthotline.com/cat savings.
Amy, I want to thank you so much for coming on Catitude and sharing all the wonderful information you told us all about. And also thank you for the information that you have for our listeners at the petparenthotline.com/cat savings.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here again.
I hope you all enjoyed this show, and I want to thank Amy Castro of Pet Parent Hotline for coming on Catitude. So thanks so much, Amy. Thanks to everyone listening to Catitude. I appreciate it so much. Woo! We're over 300 episodes. Wow. Be sure to go to petparenthotline.com/cat savings, where there'll be information on a lot of freebies and special pricing, thanks to Amy at Pet Parent Hotline. And of course, thanks to my cat crew, Dennis, Charlotte, and Molly. I appreciate you guys. And the show would not be the same without the magic of my producer. Thank you, Mark Winter, for all you do. And remember, lose the attitude. Have catitude.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.